You are listening to a podcast from Camden Community Radio.
www.ccradio.org.
Welcome to this month's World of Woe. I'm Catherine Carroll. And the events that have been stopping us in our tracks include a rising up at Easter, 100 years ago, a sad closure, and Flying Again. A hugely popular 90s girl band stages a relaunch at Camden's iconic music venue, Coco. When I first started at Camden Community Radio, our station manager was super keen for me to do an interview with Deirdre McBride from the Northern Ireland Community Relations Council about the decade of centenary anniversaries that was about to begin in Ireland. I was fairly terrified, as I had no time to prepare, and despite having Irish roots, I wouldn't say that I was well informed. But we got through it better than I could have hoped, and I certainly learned a great deal. I believe commemorations have a value. We should remember the events that have shaped our world in order to learn from them. And I think some of the bravest people are the ones who have offered forgiveness to those who have hurt them. They take the route of reconciliation. And that was one of the themes that Deirdre and I spoke about in that interview. And now, 4 years on, we're on the eve of a famous moment of Irish history. April the 24th is the official 100th anniversary of the Easter Rising of 1916. At its head, the seven men who signed a proclamation of the establishment of the Irish Republic. They were joined by more than 1,500 others taking action, mostly in Dublin, and they held out against the British Army for 6 days before making an unconditional surrender. It wasn't a male-only militia. Women were part of the action, some armed, some as couriers, some as nurses. But one woman who held the highest-ranking position among the leaders of the Rising wasn't with them. Kathleen Clark, the wife of one of the seven, was at home, guarding the secrets. The men suspected they weren't coming out alive, and they selected her, or perhaps sentenced her, to carry the flame and pass it on to others who would come after. What she went through that week has been dramatised by Irish actress Sharon Sexton in her one-woman play, A Fit Wife for a Revolutionary, which she will perform at the London Irish Centre from the 29th of March for 1 week only.
Kathleen was originally from Limerick, and she was from a family with very strong Fenian connections, and her uncle, John Daly, was very strong in the movement, and he actually was arrested when she was a youngster. So I think she was only about 5 or 6 when, in her memoirs, according to her, she started to become aware very much of everything that was happening in Ireland. So she grew up in quite a political household. So she met Tom because he was actually in prison with her uncle, and he came to visit them, and that's how she met Thomas Clark. And it's funny because, you know, even though it's A Fit Wife for a Revolutionary, I have the strongest feeling that regardless of whether she had met Thomas Clark or not, Kathleen would have been involved in everything that happened with Ireland, because she came from that kind of a background.
A lot was always asked of her, wasn't it?
She doesn't feel like a lot was asked of her, do you know what I mean? But I mean, when you and I are looking back over her story and you see what she went through, she sacrificed an awful lot. Like, she really did, you know. She lost her brother and her husband and so many of her friends. And she, as the play describes and as we know, she was the one woman that was compelled to stay inside that week, because she had to bring all of the movement on, and she had to set up the dependence funds for all of the families and the widows and everybody who was left behind. So she was there for the planning of it, had to kind of step back for the actual event, and then had to carry the whole thing forward. So yeah, she had a lot on her shoulders.
Why did they choose her?
This is actually a really lovely moment that we have isolated in the show as well. She knew that they needed to select somebody, and they needed to be reliable and capable and discreet, and somebody that would be fully acquainted with everything, and somebody who would have the mind, I suppose, to be able to go through the finances and take all the reports and divide everything, and somebody that could give all of the information to. And I suppose a woman is somebody that nobody would suspect. She was just his wife in the eyes of the neighbours on the street, do you know what I mean?
So your play looks at that week.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
For me, when I was reading her memoirs, what really stuck with me is just the loneliness. After the first couple of days, when the Rising heated up and when it got into the thick of the fighting, she was on her own. And she, I just can't even imagine, I mean, I've had to imagine because I've had to write it, but it was just overwhelming even thinking about being in that position with everybody you know out there in the middle of everything and just not being able to leave. It's that feeling of claustrophobia and of just being left alone with the thoughts that you could possibly have running through your mind. You know, you'd go to the darkest places, I'm sure she did in that week. We've kind of written the play so that we structured it so that it goes from the Good Friday, 2 days before the fighting was due to start, right through to that week. And she didn't know what was happening. She didn't know if Tom was dead or alive, if they had surrendered, if they had won, if he'd been arrested. She had no idea. So we follow her through the entire week until she gets a knock on the door, which is almost where we end the play.
I have actually seen a couple of little clips on YouTube of her speaking in older years about the two farewells when he left to join the Rising and the night before he was executed, and stiff upper lip just doesn't describe it.
No, and what she constantly said was, you know, she needed to be strong for him and that they never really got over emotional because she uses a lovely phrase where she said, you know, we knew it would break us. And that was her mantra, I think, the whole week. You know, you don't break in front of them. You keep your head held high. And just the strength that she even had to do that. It's funny, there's almost three farewells because she says goodbye to him when he's going into hiding the night before it was due to start. And then, of course, the Rising was due to start on Easter Sunday, but there was a counter order sent out and there was a lot of confusion, so they had to put the whole thing back. So he arrived back home. So she had to say goodbye to him again the next morning. There was a sense of hope the first time, whereas they knew, he knew, she knew that the whole thing was doomed, but they had gone too far to not do it now. They couldn't stop it now. The wheels were already in motion. So I think that when she was saying goodbye to him that second time, there was a definite sense of foreboding that this was not going to go the way that they had hoped. And then, of course, the farewell in Kilmainham Jail, which, reading what she wrote in her memoirs about it, it's a fascinating conversation. But we didn't want to put Thomas on the stage or even pretend that he was on the stage because we want the show to be about her. So we've left that one alone. And also because I think it's so intimate between the two of them, you couldn't portray it justly, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we've concentrated on the saying goodbyes before he leaves, and I've just left that one.
She didn't tell him that she was pregnant.
That's right.
She saved him that.
Yeah. And again, that was something that we toyed with putting into the play. And I've been in touch with her relatives as well, a couple of her relatives who are still alive, Helen Litton, who actually edited her memoirs. And I met her for coffee in Dublin before Christmas just to tell her how it was going. And that was a question that I asked. And I said, you know, to me, she lost the baby a few days later. And she never told him that she was pregnant. And to me, that's something so personal. And Helen's take on it was, it is personal, but it is one of the things that people remember really strongly when they think of Kathleen and they think of that goodbye. And she put it in her memoirs, so it's out there. I debated whether or not to put that in, but like that, it is something that sticks with people because it humanises the whole thing, you know, it makes it real. And it also, I think, shows another element to what the women went through at that time, you know, who were fighting and who were out there and who were part of it. Like, she was pregnant for the entire week, which is just another, for me as a performer, it's another thing to kind of having to bear in mind. So it's quite a sad part of her story.
I spoke about her to my son last night and said she was formidable, and he said, well, she's Irish. But she was extraordinary because she eventually lived to 94, but she was a TD, an Irish Member of Parliament.
She was the first Lord Mayor of Dublin, the first female Lord Mayor of Dublin, and she did quite a lot. Also, I think one of her big passions was to try and get Ireland the Red Cross branch unit, so she's responsible for that as well and so much more. Yeah, she really went on to have quite a prestigious career in politics.
Well, good luck with that. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me. It's great to chat to you.
Camden Community Radio, where the fun happens.
Just a reminder, A Fit Wife for a Revolutionary is on at the London Irish Centre in Camden Square from March the 29th for 1 week. Performances are at 7:45 and tickets cost £12 or £10. And you can contact the London Irish Centre on 0207 916 2222. Now, Camden Community Radio is constantly coming up with new shows. Our latest offering, Refusing to Implode Politely, is coming soon. Zoe Stegosaurus will tell us more.
Why do you write? When there's folks need feeding, feeling the bitter bite of another heating bill, hearts bleeding, frayed blankets fending off the chill, what gives you the right to sit reading poesy? Scratch at notepaper with pen, no attempt to satisfy the hungry mouths of men, women and others, your brothers, sisters, family fight while you're at leisure musing. And what of you? True. These are hostile times in which to sit with pen and paper writing rhymes. The rent's due, there's holes in our shoes, and Boris has put up the price of the tube again. But my friend, is art and fellow feeling dead already? Or is it in these times of cuts, of hungry mouths and battered spirits that our hearts cry out, our souls exceed their natural limits, we expand and reach for the communal artistic riches with which to fill our empty purses? Lest our lives run dry, we're tossed by circumstance into the ditch of a hopeless life. The urge to scribe can be the urge to nourish hearts when stomachs rumble, to rise like kites against the wind, bring light to tunnels, offer shelter in the thunderstorm of adversity under human commonality. My friend, we've a humble yearning to share the currency of creativity, to not be penny-pinching with our spirits or tighten the belt of understanding. Desperation is only half the story here. The others told in multitudinous voices, shimmering in unison every flea-bitten night beside our river. Its name is resilience. Refusing to Implode Politely, a new show featuring performances of spoken word, poetry and music, and interviews with London-based artists.
You're listening to a download from Camden Community Radio.
www.ccradio.org.
On my way to the studio this morning, I chose to walk past our favourite cafe, The Royal, one last time. After 24 years, it's closing. It was painful to see the place being cleared out and dismantled. You may remember that Freddie Chick's recent report for Camden Community Radio paid tribute to this Camden landmark and to the fascinating characters who frequented the place. At the time, we understood that the proprietors were going into a happy and well-deserved retirement, but we've since learned that far from going into blissful retreat, our dear hosts have had to take the heartbreaking decision to leave, as their landlord, Network Rail, have increased their rent by 100%.
I mean, 6 months is the pushing them. Everything I try, but city say they know, never less than £50,000, and I can't carry up.
So you're pretty angry with Network Rail?
Of course. I'm not too happy. Of course I'm angry. My life is the finish here. All my 3 children are here. My husband is in the 4 years' time, lost both the 2 legs. And now he's in the, his is the protus leg. Very hard times to my family anyway.
Oh, I'm sorry to see you. That's so upsetting.
I'm very big, lived upset, of course. Not one day, 2 days, 24 years.
Freddie contacted Network Rail, and they gave him this statement.
All of our leases are reviewed at renewal to make sure that they are in line with current market rents. We understand that this is a considerable increase in rent, but it is in a prime location, and the price reflects the increase in rents affecting everyone across London. We offered Mr. Koch the lower end of the valuation and tried to work with him to make the increase more manageable.
You can hear more about the story on our website in Freddie's special report. Any fans of the 90s group All Saints won't need reminding that they sold a tremendous 12 million records, including Never Ever and Black Coffee. They split, got back together, and split again. But a phone call asking them to join a revival tour in 2014 may have got them back together for good. They say the tour made them realise they'd spent too little time performing in the past and too much time promoting. We realise we had fans, they said. So they got back into the studio and recently released a new single, One Strike, which was described as lovelorn yet uplifting, and was inspired by band member Nicole Appleton's divorce from Liam Gallagher, formerly of Oasis. Their new album is released in April, and they've chosen to launch it at Camden's iconic music venue, Coco, in a special gig on April the 4th. It should be a great night with new songs from the album and all their hits. They launch a full tour in October. Till then, check out Coco on the 4th. And check us out next month on Camden Community Radio. Bye for now.
You're listening to a download from Camden Community Radio.
www.ccradio.org